Are you looking for ways to attract and retain private pay clients? Thrizer is a payment platform for therapists built to help clients automatically tap into their out-of-network benefits and save on therapy up front. Check out our special link, join.thrizer.com/modern therapist, and use the code modernTherapists to activate $2,500 in free payments with Thrizer.
Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY done with you training and done for you SEO options. So there is truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist and use the code modern therapist for a DIY course or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your consult for special offers.
You're listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide, where therapists live, breathe, and practice as human beings. To support you as a whole person and a therapist, here are your hosts, Kurt Widhelm and Katie Vernoy.
Welcome back, Modern Therapists. This is the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and this is the podcast for therapists about the things that we do in our practices, in our lives, and to each other, and all of the messages that we get. And we get a lot of emails, comments, questions at our conferences when we present of just kind of, there seems to be a lot of conflicting advice given to us as far as what we should be in the fields. And one hand, we should charge what we're worth. On the other, we need to be accessible to everybody. And what we've found is that these answers kind of change, that there's some stages of development that, depending on where you're at in your career, you might look at some of this advice as being actual, you know, straight up facts that you have to follow. Those who are further along in things might find that they're reacting in other ways. And the ultimate place that a lot of us try to hopefully come to is understanding the context of things. So especially if you're a student or pre-licensed person here, stick with this, put on your grad adhesive and listen through this episode. And
what is grad adhesive?
It's sticking with it as a grad student.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I think what we're going to say is actually helpful for folks who are considering becoming supervisors as well. So
absolutely.
In any developmental stage, I think this is a good episode to listen to.
This is something where there is a lot of conflicting advice in the field. We've talked about, you know, prioritizing what your values are. You can't have it all, but there is just kind of some mental gymnastics that people have to go through as far as being like, I need to do this and I need to do this, that leads to trying to do it all and burning out, being flustered. Where do you think that this comes from?
I think first I want to describe a little bit more what mental gymnastics look like, because I think there's mental gymnastics on one end, and I think there's also some real rigidity on the other end. And so I want to just talk briefly about that, because if we look at charge your worth but be accessible, I think some of the mental gymnastics there goes to make sure you're charging full fee to most of the folks and then do like a handful of pro bono clients, or do a hybrid practice, or like people figure out, okay, what does this mean? How do I charge my worth or make enough money or get a good living while also being accessible? And what we've talked about before, and what I'll do in the show notes, is make sure to link to some of these other episodes. But we've talked about really identifying what you want and what's going to make your practice better, and don't fix systemic problems individually. Like, you can't fix access by yourself, for example.
Right.
But I don't think that gets practical enough for folks, because I think there's this other element of, if I'm not doing these mental gymnastics, trying to do these two dichotomous things, then I'm getting really rigid and going to a place of, well, no, I'm going to charge as much as I can and I'm not going to worry about access at all. And if you worry about access, you're doing it wrong, or vice versa, right? And so then we get into the, that's unethical, or you are awful, or how do you do that? And it becomes this either I'm pulling everything in and trying to figure out how to do all of it at once, or I've filtered through it and now everyone should do it the way that I do it, and is very rigid. And I think to me that comes from a fairly early developmental stage. And theoretically, we would move out of this, but I don't think as a profession that always happens. I think that there are folks that end up stuck in these developmental stages because they don't know where to go. And I think that's the hard part for me, is I see folks, even later career folks sometimes, in this more rigid place. And then they're also continuing these things if they're supervising or mentoring or consulting with folks and kind of saying, you must do it this way. You must do 100% EFT, or you must do 100% DBT. Like, it's those types of things where, given situational things where those might be the right answers, I think that it becomes this thing where it's very hard to get out of this rigid space if we're not moving along the stages of development as professionals.
So we're going to get into some of the stages of how we see one of the models looking at kind of our field here. But I'm wondering, what is limiting some of the people from actually progressing, especially, you know, some of these supervisors or later career clinicians, that they're not moving to kind of this space where they can afford to not be rigid about everything?
That's a good question. I think when folks get stuck being rigid, there's this element of a lack of resources in some way. And it could be a lack of resilience. It could be folks that are burnt out or kind of phoning it in. I think especially in later career, they just are so exhausted with the field. I think there's also that element for later career folks anyway, where it's like, I know what I know, and I'm getting CEs at the last moment that align exactly with what I'm already doing. And there's not a kind of openness to, controversy is the wrong word, you know, kind of discourse around what is true and not true. I think that most of the folks listening to this podcast don't sit there. I mean, we're called the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. We talk about skeptics and outliers. Like, we are purposefully leaning into folks who are willing to push back against the status quo. But I think when you're really kind of, this is where I sit, this is my lane, and this is what I know, and I'm going to teach people what I know, it's very comfortable. I think for folks who are moving from early stage on, I think that the stuckness is not having enough perspectives or getting locked into places that are so misaligned that you aren't able to replenish your resources. And so you're in that same place. I think it's under-resourced folks, honestly, or under-motivated folks.
I'm going to come back to this question as we go through things. And part of this conversation is something that we had talked about in our first Therapy Reimagined conference back in 2019, and kind of some of the developmental stages and that therapists go through. And one of the things that happens when you have a weekly podcast that goes for 4+ years is...
I think we're at 5 years now.
Five plus years. It goes on for a long time, is we revisit topics, we read more, we've developed more of things. And we had no reason not to look at this information before it was out there. And what I'm talking about is there's a series of stages that are described in William Perry's Scheme of Intellectual and Ethical Development. And this is been around since the late 70s when William Perry first developed this. It's been updated a couple of times, and it was really largely written around looking at how college students develop. But as I've revisited this recently, there's a lot that what you're talking about here seems to also describe what a lot of therapists tend to go through. I'm sure other people go through it too, but our focus on the podcast here is therapists.
Well, and therapists are different. Therapists are special.
So we'll call this Kurt Widhelm's version of William Perry's Scheme of Intellectual and Ethical Development for therapists.
All right.
And as I'm not going to make this episode about this model, but I think that there's specific aspects that are described in here that we need to be aware of in ourselves if we're at a supervisory position, that we can help foster some of the conversation of the people that we're mentoring, and also being able to create some space for our reactions and things. So a lot of what Perry talks about is this idea of dualism, that things are either one way or the other. Things are either right or wrong. Things are either the correct way or the incorrect way. And, you know, this is you know, great black and white thinking, but it comes from this idea at its most basic stage that all problems are solvable. And I think that that is something where...
And this is early, the first stage.
This is the very first stage.
Okay. Okay. Just wanted to clarify because I missed that. Okay.
This is the very first stage. Everything is solvable. Get our first semester grad students in there that's just like, I need to ask the right questions and find the right answers, and then I will go out and do those things and things will be fixed.
Yes.
And that is, with some experience, found out to be not what works in the world.
No. Not everything is fixable. Not everything is solvable.
So moving past that basic duality, Perry describes full dualism, which is that recognition that some authorities disagree, and therefore it's not about finding the right solutions, but it's about finding the right authority to listen to and listen to their answers.
Okay, so don't seek anybody that disagrees with you. Just listen to the person you like.
Right. So... You know, if you think of any of the debates around which, you know, method or theory is the right one, this is the end all be all answer to everything.
Yes.
This is kind of where some of that development ends up happening.
So this is only stage two, though. How many stages are there?
There's like nine. And
okay, so this is really early on. So folks that are still like, EMDR is the only way to go, are stuck in stage two. I just want to make sure I'm clear.
I mean, yeah. Thrizer is a payment platform designed for out-of-network therapy. As a therapist, you would use Thrizer to charge clients for sessions and collect your full rate up front. From the client's perspective, Thrizer links to their health plan, so insurance claims are automatically submitted for them upon every charge. From there, Thrizer manages the claims end-to-end so that your clients don't have to worry about manually submitting super bills or getting on calls with insurance. The best part? Thrizer allows clients to only pay their co-insurance portion for sessions, while Thrizer covers the rest of your fee and waits for reimbursement on their behalf.
They also offer you an instant benefits calculator for free, allowing you to provide upfront transparency to prospective clients on their out-of-network coverage. Therapists only pay a standard 3% credit card processing fee per session with no additional fees. Visit join.thrizer.com/modern therapist to get started and use our promo code Modern Therapists to receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
Moving into stage three, this is called early multiplicity. So this is starting to look at, oh, there are two kinds of problems, those whose solutions we know and those whose solutions we don't know yet. You know, okay. The research doesn't back this up yet. Now, the ironic thing is this early multiplicity sort of thing is still basic duality.
Yeah. Okay. I know things or I don't know things.
Right.
But it's getting to, there are things I don't know. There are things I don't know that I don't know.
Right. Now, this is where we're going to really spend a lot of our time talking as far as how we are currently seeing some of the problems and the solutions to the things that we identified at the top of the episode here. And this is Perry's stage four. This is called late multiplicity, which recognizes that most problems are of solutions that we don't know yet.
Okay.
And therefore, everyone has a right to their opinion. And some problems are unsolvable. And therefore, it doesn't matter what you choose. This is really more of where the task is to be able to sit through and be comfortable in the uncomfortableness of, is this a problem without a solution? Is this a problem that has a solution that I can only partially solve with the skills and tricks and tools that I have? It's really before fully accepting the context of, here is what is capable and what my role is in this. This is an uncomfortable space because inherent in this is kind of this like giving up if it becomes like, I can't fix everything. Well, everyone has a right to their own opinion on things. You know, it's kind of this dismissive, like, all right, yeah, you're an internal family systems person, fine, you can have your opinion on things. That's not what I do. You know, you go do you. I'm still going to, you know, try and fix all of these problems with the tools that I have, rather than being able to kind of be like, all right, I can sit with some aspects of this are still not going to be solvable with the tools that even the both of us end up having.
Yes. Okay. So we're going to come back to that one, because that's, I think, where a lot of people sit. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. But I want to get through all the model. I want to see where I land. I'm so excited to hear.
You know, I'm going to quickly go through the rest of this. Stage 5, contextual relativism. All proposed solutions are supported by reason. They must be viewed in context and relative to support. Some solutions are better than others, depending on the context. At this stage, the task is to learn how to evaluate solutions.
Stage 5 is the it depends stage.
Yes.
Okay.
Stage 6 is pre-commitment. This is making choices, committing to a solution. Stages 7 through 9 is following through on the solution, evolving commitments, taking the experience of having made that decision and using that to refine future processes, and reflection and growth on it.
Okay. So all of a sudden it switched from like stages to how do you solve a problem like Maria?
It's it's really more of kind of positions within this. So
Got it. Okay. So basically people get more and more able to sit with uncertainty. They do more and more assessment of what they don't know. And then potentially they also use their own experience to refine what they do know and continue forward and kind of assess things and make sure they're doing some sort of quality control and feedback. Mm-hmm.
But I want to focus on this position for this late multiplicity, because I see that this is where a lot of people are not comfortable with that uncomfortableness.
Yes.
And Perry goes on to describe that there's a couple of things that end up happening here. One is people try to regress to an earlier stage. If they don't know what the solution is, then it's just kind of this, fine, tell me what to do.
Yeah.
You know, this the teenager that you might be sitting with in your session, or if you're a parent to your own kids, that's just that if you're trying to get that deeper level of thinking where it's like, all right, if you commit to this strategy, think about these consequences. Are these the ones that you have? Oh, fine. I'm not going to pick that one. I'm going to pick this other one. Well, did you think about the consequences that might happen with this one? Well, you're just going to come up with wrong answers for everything that I do. Fine. You just tell me what to do.
Yeah. And it's hugely uncomfortable, right? Because it's taking a risk and not knowing if the answer is going to be what you want, right? Like, there are risks involved in committing to these things when there's not just a single right answer.
Yes.
And so you're saying then folks regress back to, okay, well, then tell me the right answer, or I'm just not going to do anything.
Right. Some people want to back off, and I see that this is where maybe some of that rigidity ends up coming from, is there is safety in just having dualistic black and white answers. If there is a policy by somebody who I have followed and ascribed to, I will sit and follow that policy because there is safety and I can pass the responsibility on to it's the model's fault, it's the guru's fault, it's the agency director's fault, because this is their policy and all I did was follow the policy.
Well, and I think even I've seen it, folks go into Facebook groups and say, I had this weird thing happen. What do I do? And sometimes folks are responding with more nuanced answers, but sometimes folks are coming back and saying, well, make your policy more rigid and hold to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a continuum there. There's definitely like, hold your boundaries, set a policy and hold your boundaries. But it's like, if your client, you know, cancels at 23 hours and 52 minutes before the session, every time you must charge for that, I didn't do the 24-hour cancellation. And it's like, yes, I understand that there is a need to hold a policy and that is against the policy, but there may be reasons why you don't. Mm-hmm. And there is some nuance, and you may make the right decision sometimes and you may make the right decision or the wrong decision sometimes. But I think there's that element of get more rigid, be very clear so that your clients know exactly what to expect, which I, to a certain extent, I agree. but also make it so that you don't have to make a decision each time something happens, because that's too hard. It could be wrong. So strict policy.
As an educator, the way that I look at this is we are so steeped in systems where we need to lay out exactly what to do at all times. The frustrating part of creating rubrics for assignments in classes is really just kind of, if I spell everything out into very specific behavioral descriptions of what needs to be included for each part of the assignment, it sometimes ends up sucking the spirit out of the assignment and just being more of, did you meet these rote parameters to be able to make this not uncomfortable as far as trying to figure out the learning process for themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a really important thing to recognize, whether you're a supervisor or a student in development, is that part of the process of growing up and getting through these things is being better at sitting with some ambiguity. And if we as supervisors and mentors try to rescue our students, our supervisees, from being uncomfortable, we're actually stunting their developmental growth by just providing them with the answers.
Yeah, I think that's a really strong point, because I think there's this can happen all the way up the chain, right?
It can be,
you know, clinicians giving that kind of advice or feedback or support to their clients so they don't have to sit with discomfort, that and supervisors giving that to the therapist, and then supervision of supervision providing that to supervisors. And I think that's the thing I see a lot in some of these Facebook groups too, is someone, and I think this speaks to your mental gymnastics thing, is someone will say, hey, I did this thing. And there's times when everybody comes back, that's unethical, you shouldn't have done it. Or if I could go back in time, I would have started it this way. Like, people are wanting to say you did the wrong answer. But the mental gymnastics part are, I see a lot of people reassuring the person that they've done the thing exactly right. Trust your instincts. You know, I'm sure that this was going on, and so this is why you implemented this rule. You know, it's like those types of things where people, you know, again, we can talk a million times about how social media doesn't allow for context, but I think there's that element of, I just want to reassure you that what you did is okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it also speaks to being able to provide the context of largely who is on social media, that a lot of times we see the people who are posting being at this stage of development where it's, I want to be able to provide the answers for everybody here. I want to get my name out in the community. I am being helpful in the way that I know how to be helpful, which I think a lot of more fully developed clinicians would be not looking to be posting where their conundrums are into these groups, that they would be going to other people who can help slow down the process and be able to tease things out. And so what ends up happening is that a lot of the Facebook groups that you and I complain about and frankly scour just for content to be able to create episodes out of is largely populated by earlier career people looking for more dualistic answers of, I need an answer to sit with that is right for me, just tell me what to do. And so a lot of even the prompts that are getting missed are not representative of the entire field. It's largely, in my opinion, of people at kind of a very specific point in their academic, ethical, and intellectual development.
I think that can be true. I think that there are definitely groups I've seen where there has been deeper conversations that go into more of this nuance. And it does require super long posts and super long responses. And it requires a different type of folk to actually engage and stay engaged with those types of posts. And so I think that there probably is a broad array of folks that are engaging in these things. And I have seen later career therapists come in and try to give a little bit of nuance or kind of point out some of this dualistic thinking and like, wait, did you consider this part of it? You know, I do think that by and large, that element of folks on social media providing these dualistic answers is problematic. Mm-hmm. It really gets to a place where folks really feel like if there's any kind of question or something where they don't feel comfortable in their own skin, they're going to a place where they can get, and I think we said this in our bad social media advice, but they can go and get that micro validation, right? That
right.
And oftentimes it's risky because other times they can get that immediate, you are unethical. You didn't put enough stuff. So you were horrible and bad and you should stop seeing clients and all of that stuff. And so it's a dangerous space because then people, I would imagine, would regress even further and not really dig into these gray areas, to these unsolvable problems or these problems that are not solved with the current tools and skills. I think it's that element of we need to have deeper conversations, not these rigid, tiny little conversations about what we should do and not do. Simplified SEO Consulting's team of mental health professionals genuinely want to help you attract more of your ideal clients with a proven on-page SEO process using the strategies that are most effective for therapist websites. They know SEO is an investment, which is why it is so important to find someone who aligns with your values and understands the importance of building your private practice in a meaningful way. Simplified SEO Consulting hopes to be that team for you and your practice.
The expert team would love to talk with you during a free consultation to figure out the best fit for your SEO journey. Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY, done with you training, and done for you SEO options. So there's truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Be sure to ask if their innovative content network is a good fit for your website. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off a DIY SEO course with code MODERNTHERAPIST or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off your done-for-you SEO program onboarding this spring.
Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern-therapist.
Now, there's another thing that people do at this stage. If they don't regress, they rebel. And according to Perry,
that's you and me.
In aspects of things. And according to Perry, this is that with the realization that authorities are fallible, an easy generalization follows. Where authorities don't have all of the answers, that makes everyone's opinion equally valid. Yeah. This person, this theory was wrong in this one specific instance. So therefore, it is wrong all across the board.
Okay. So not just rebelling against this dualistic thinking, rebelling against like a particular thing, like I give up. That's not right. Nothing is right.
Now, Perry goes on to say that students typically are struggling to assert some sort of independence in this stage. And it doesn't even need to make sense in any sort of logical way to get stuck in this rebellious stage, that there's a lot of personal bias that can end up coming in. It's very subjective. What students end up happening here, or kind of at this developmental stage that we see in some of the Facebook groups, is if somebody can't prove me wrong, then that means that I'm right.
Well, I see this, I hate to say it, but I see this in really rigid thinking with folks who are in advocacy. And potentially even whether it's social justice movements or what you and I might consider hate movements. Like, I think there's that, you can't prove me wrong, so I am right. And you were wrong and evil. And I am against you.
Yes. This can also end up being just kind of where quantity gets confused with quality. There's not quite that ability to look at what might be the criticisms of my type of thinking. And so it just becomes kind of this emotionally driven, like, I'm right because my feelings inform me being right. You're wrong because you don't have the answers here. But I want to get to kind of the last thing in Perry here, which is that if people aren't regressing, if they're not rebelling, then they just play the game. And that's, we just tell people what they want to hear. Like, I'm just gonna fall in line. I'm gonna give the right answers in these certain areas, even if I don't fully agree with it. But where this ultimately comes down and kind of bringing this back to which of these messages in our field do you choose to follow is being able to kind of recognize at this stage of any skill that you're developing, and this is not just like you make it past these stages and you're good to go forever. Like if you learn a new skill or a new theory or, you know, go to a great continuing education course, you're likely going to run into a lot of these developmental things on these new areas that you're learning about. So it's getting to this point of, do I just follow what you tell me what to do? Do I rebel and be like, no, this is the right way to do things? Do I just say, okay, you know, person leading this, I'm just going to do exactly what you say. Then I'm going to go and do my own things off on the side anyway. It's kind of its own form of rebellion. Sure. But it's kind of testing out your thoughts and being able to reevaluate. Oh, I've committed to this. These are the mistakes that I've made along the way. These are the things that I am doing to better add more context to each of these situations so that way I can go more slowly through this. So getting back to rigidity, getting back to some of these policy sorts of things, you and I have both learned, like telling people, hey, don't be rigid about this, has improved approximately 0% of anybody in our field.
I think that's a pretty rigid way to describe that. I think probably we've helped a lot of people.
I think we've given people the space to take in that message, which allows for them to move on from that. But strictly just telling people, hey, you're doing this wrong, reinforces fall in line, go back to one of those earlier developmental stages, rather than play through the consequences on this. What would it be like to only adhere to this very strict policy? And I think that when we tend to grow up in this field, if we aren't given the space to be able to kind of start thinking for ourselves, that we tend to mentor in the ways that we were mentored. And if this just becomes one generation of rigid mentorship to the next, and that's just what gets passed down, I think that that's part of what contributes to our field here, is that this just becomes the rigid leading the rigid.
I agree. I think that even in the way you're describing it, though, I think it doesn't take that far enough. I think when we're looking at how do we, and we have a whole episode on making decisions, but when we look at how we're going to come into our own, I think it really speaks to critical thinking. If somebody's saying, do this, I always go to the question that I've gone to probably since I was 12. Why? Why should I do that? Maybe it was 5. I don't know. I'll have to ask my mom. But like, I think there's that element of understanding the process element of it rather than the content element, which is what therapists are good at. I think if we understand why we're doing what we're doing, or why this is being recommended, or what the point is of what it is that's being taught or instructed, we can then get to a space where we can actually almost not start from scratch, but start from a place of, do I align with this why? Do I align with what's trying to be done here? And if so, is there another way I can do it if this instruction doesn't work for me, right? And so it becomes this deeper thought about what we're doing and why we're doing it, and gives us some space to be a little bit more nuanced. For example, cancellation policies. Why do we do cancellation policies? Some people, it may be, if I don't have a cancellation policy, people will just come and not come no matter what. And they'll take advantage of me, right? Or, you know, and it has this feel of the client is somehow needing to be minded mm-hmm. and monitored, or they will take advantage of me, right? For some folks, it's financially, I need that spot to be filled. And so this is just a business decision. For some folks, it's a clinical decision. There's a lot of different reasons why people might have a certain cancellation policy. Mm-hmm. Now, most of us have probably gone to the de facto 24 hours. And I think that probably deserves some assessment if that works for you. But the reason that you have the policy is more important than do I follow it or not in some ways. Mm-hmm. And so I think getting to what your reasons are, because I know my cancellation policy has completely changed since COVID. If somebody didn't cancel within 24 hours and it was sick, I would charge them. I don't charge them now because I don't want them coming into my office sick. I might recommend, are you up for a virtual session? But I'm certainly not going to require them to do a virtual session. And I'm not going to charge them if they're sick.
Sure.
Now, if they're constantly sick and there's, and they're like, oh, well, they'll just take advantage of you, right? I think if it gets to that place, I think then you start assessing these things. But I think people get so caught up in kind of rigid thinking and just doing it because it needs to be done and then having a power struggle over what they haven't really thought through why they're doing it and how they're doing it. I think that's the part that worries me. And so to me, it's about, okay, what is actually being talked about here? And is there a different solution that works more for me and how it lines up for me? And so that's a longer conversation than we have time for here. I think to me, being able to take a breath and actually assess what is it that's even being discussed here, I think that pulls you even further back from let me try this out and test it out. I think that's stage two, not stage one.
This is stuff that we've talked about in a number of our episodes, maybe not this explicitly. You know, the being able to look at the hows and the whys of what you're doing, rules are for the profession. They're not for you as the individual. That you can advocate for better access to care while not being the one who shoulders the responsibility for it. You can work within a difficult work environment, going back to the toxic work environments episode, and still be able to find some space for yourself. You don't need to shoulder the responsibility of fixing the broken system, but you can still also find ways to thrive there. You can post stuff on social media, bad social media episode, that is, without looking at it, turns into, oh, this only makes sense within this one specific thing. I'm not looking at how I'm thinking about things. So this is really maybe the takeaway of just kind of think about how you're thinking about things, because there might be the unintended consequences. There might be just kind of the grasping onto what feels safe, but sitting with that discomfort is ultimately what makes you as the individual better and us as the profession better.
I feel like I'm kind of saying, yes, recreate the wheel.
It's not necessarily recreate the wheel. It's evaluate, is the wheel still in good shape?
Does the wheel work for my vehicle?
Yeah.
All right.
So we would love to hear from you. You can follow us on our social media. You can join our Modern Therapist Facebook community. You can reach out to us on our website, where you can find our show notes, mtsgpodcast.com. And if you like our content, you want to find ways to support us, you can consider becoming a patron or support us on Buy Me a Coffee. And until next time, I'm Kurt Woodhelm with Katie Vernoy. Remember to check out Thrizer. They are passionate about making out-of-network therapy work for everyone. Clients save upfront on therapy while therapists earn their full rate. Get started in minutes on join.thrizer.com/modern therapist and use the promo code Modern Therapists and receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
Don't forget, we have some special offers from our partner, Simplified SEO Consulting. Get 20% off a DIY SEO course with the code Modern Therapist, or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off of your onboarding to the Done For You SEO program. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. Learn more about who we are and what we do at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes.